Now, 26 years after the Oma bombing, a public inquiry into the worst single atrocity of the Troubles has begun. It will examine whether anything could have been done to prevent the bombing, which was carried out by the group calling itself the Real IRA. 29 people, including Avril Monaghan, who was pregnant with twins, were killed. Speaking on his way into the inquiry, campaigner Michael Gallagher, who lost his 21-year-old son Aidan, said the families he speaks for were pleased to get to this day.
Absolutely. I think it's taken us almost 26 years to get here, and we're just delighted. And one of the sad ironies is that when I got up this morning and seen the sunshine, it was exactly the same on the 15th of August 1998. It was one of the beautifulest days of that year. And yeah, it's good to be here. It's good. It's taken a long time, but we are where we want to be. And we'll just have to wait and see where this inquiry takes us.
Stanley McComb, whose wife Anne was killed in the bombing, said he had great faith in the inquiry chairman and his legal team.
Well, we've got here with a Secretary of State who was on our side. We have Lord Turnbull, who we have great faith in, and our legal team we have great faith in. And I suppose after 25 years of hard labour, as we would call it, through Michael and myself, we're hopeful.
Yeah,
we're very, very hopeful.
Stanley McComb. We can go now to our northern correspondent, Conor McCauley, who's been following these proceedings. Conor, it's a very long time since the families of those killed in Oma first asked for an inquiry. Will you tell us about the path that led to today?
Good afternoon, Rachel. Yes, it has been a very long journey for those families, a long campaign for this public inquiry by some of the families of the victims. Principally, it has to be said, Michael Gallagher, who took a legal action. And that culminated in a High Court ruling in 2021, which said there was a plausible argument that better intelligence handling could have prevented the 1998 Real IRA atrocity. That led the previous UK government, the Tory government, to say that it was prepared to grant the inquiry to test that thesis. I mean, a huge amount has been written and reported around the warnings in the days and hours ahead of the explosion, and whether a more stringent security response perhaps might have been enough to thwart the bombers. A lot of, I think, what we're going to hear through the course of this inquiry is going to focus on intelligence matters. The inquiry here today, that some of that might have to be held in closed session because of national security considerations. But the chairman gave a commitment that once oral hearings start, and if closed sessions are necessary, that the public will be given a gist or a summary of that closed session evidence, so that they will have as good an understanding as they can have of the issues that are at hand.
What's been happening so far then?
Well, this is day one of the inquiry, but there's no actual evidence or witnesses being heard today. This is a preliminary hearing, but it is a very important day. Many of the families have travelled here in person. Others, for example, those who were affected in Spain, are watching online. Effectively, I think they're really sorting out the housekeeping around the conduct of the inquiry, and we are expecting the oral hearings, I suppose what people might consider to be the inquiry proper, to begin in January with pen portraits of the victims, I think quite similar to our experience of the Stardust inquiry. A considerable focus of this morning has been on the level of cooperation of the Irish state with this UK inquiry. I mean, people who will remember back to that time may know that the bomb appeared to come from the Republic. The bombers fled back over the border. So a vitally important part of getting at the truth will be what the inquiry can glean from documents and witnesses and intelligence, which is in Irish state records.
And the question of Irish government cooperation with this inquiry, that's already been raised.
It has, yeah. There's what we learned this morning was that there's been considerable contact, both in person and in writing, to come to an agreement around some of this, which is difficult stuff. There have been contact with the officials of the government and with senior figures in an Garda Síochána. As we know, we have cabinet approval now, formal cabinet approval, for formal assistance to be permitted. We heard that there have been a number of meetings with Irish officials to work all of this out. Obviously, it is a very delicate area when it comes to, for example, cross-border sharing of intelligence material. Counsel for the inquiry, Paul Graney, who's a person we're going to hear a lot from in the conduct of this inquiry, said no one doubted the commitment of the Irish government to help the inquiry get to the truth, but he said it was now time for formal written agreements on how all of this is going to happen.
The intention of the inquiry, may we make plain, is to ensure, with emphasis on that word, that those discussions now move into a practical phase in which clear written agreements are put in place to make certain that the inquiry has full access to any potentially relevant materials held by the state authorities in the Republic of Ireland, and that it has the ability to obtain statements and call witnesses to attend the inquiry to give evidence in person.
Now, a senior Irish official is due to make a statement before the close of proceedings today, so we should learn from that how this process of information sharing and witness production will work. Although, just in the last few minutes, for example, I have heard some concern from representatives of some of the families that they think questions will remain unanswered without a parallel public inquiry taking place in the Republic of Ireland.
Conor, thanks indeed. That was our Northern correspondent, Conor McCauley.